This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, and welcome to episode 27 of Frankly MSP, the podcast for managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. I'm your host, Jennifer Tribe. At AVIC, we talk a lot about how difficult network management can be for an MSP. One of the reasons we say it's hard, and this is based on what we've seen anecdotally from the many MSPs that we work with, is that there are very few standards when it comes to networking. You've got hundreds of vendors with thousands of different device models between them. Each of the major players has their own twist on the OS so that a command you'd use in Cisco's iOS, for example, might not be the same as the command you'd use to do the exact same thing in the Juniper OS. It's frustrating, and frankly, it creates real hassles for you as the MSP or anybody who has to manage a wide variety of network vendor gear. So, like I said, this is something we at AVIC have seen anecdotally time and time again, but we were curious to know the stats, the real numbers behind the problem, just how much of an issue is vendor diversity across an MSP's client base. And we realized we have that data. We have data on thousands and thousands of MSP-managed networks. So we put it all together into an industry report we recently published called Managing Network Vendor Diversity, the MSP Challenge. And today on the show, I'm going to be talking to Alex Hoff, AVIC's VP of Product and Sales. He's the primary author on this report, and we're going to be discussing some of the findings and what they mean to you and your service provider business. That's coming up, but first, as usual, we turn to Richard Tubb and Carl Palachuk for a look at what's going on in the world through an MSP lens.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by AVIC Networks.
Hey folks, Richard Tubb here at home in the studio garage in Newcastle upon Tyne in the northeast of the UK. And as always, I'm joined by my very good friend and MSP expert, Carl Palachuk. How are you doing there today, Carl?
Very, very good. Enjoying my actual last days of summer here.
We're not doing quite as well here in the northeast of the UK. I've actually put my first cardigan of the year on. It's got that chilly. So, talking about weather, and one of the stories I wanted to jump into this week, Carl, that caught my eye, was to do with adverse weather conditions actually affecting Microsoft and one of their data centers for Azure. It's not the weather I'm particularly interested in, but yeah, Microsoft experienced an Azure outage this week, and they had to turn to Twitter to notify Azure users there was a problem. Frank Olhorst of Channel Futures reported this. He reported that Azure support shared a tweet on the 4th of September saying, engineers are aware of an issue affecting resources in central USA. For continued updates, please visit the Azure status page at status.azure.com. Unfortunately, Carl, that status website itself was unresponsive.
Of course.
Now, this is not a dig at Microsoft. All the major cloud players experience these issues. But anyway, going further into this story, services that relied on the Azure Active Directory were apparently impacted, and customers attempting to provision new subscriptions also encountered problems. Now, the issue lasted around 24 hours, and as I said at the top of the story, was caused by severe weather near one of Microsoft's data centers. Now, definitely nobody can blame Microsoft for an outage caused by a natural disaster. But the thing that struck me about this story, Carl, is that surely this is a wake-up call for MSPs that they need to provide robust communications and disaster recovery solutions for their clients. What do you think?
Well, let me give you just a slightly bit of related information. The next day, the 5th, I was doing a presentation on cloud services. And several people were quite distracted by the fact that their staff was having issues with Azure. Mm. So while I'm up there saying the cloud is the only answer, blah, 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 you know, there were people in the audience who couldn't even pay attention because they were having so many problems. So part of it is we have to remember that whatever the technology is, there are going to be issues. There's issues with electricity. There's issues with the internet going down. And there will be issues with cloud services. That reality doesn't change with the technology. Mm. What changes is, like you said, how do we make sure that we have a good backup system? How do we make sure that we're securing our clients to the extent that we can? And how do we make sure that they have as much uptime as possible when things go out that we don't have control over? I believe personally that for the next at least 5, maybe 10 years, we're in an era where we need to have an Active Directory server on site. It doesn't have to be massive and robust, and you don't need a HP ML350 that costs $5,000. But you need something with Active Directory on site so people can at least log on.
From the technology perspective, there was actually some great suggestions from cloud veteran David Birmingham of SIOS Technology on that article. And we'll include the link to that Channel Futures article in the show notes. Dave actually suggested a number of things, including defining availability zones within Azure to minimize inconvenience in outages. So I actually think the availability zones are not available, ironically, for South Central US, but it's good advice in itself, because then if one data center goes down, you've still got access via other data centers. But also Dave gave the advice, and I think this chimes in with what you've just said there, examine your SaaS options. Because you're trusting a business critical application to a single vendor, you may have very little control in terms of DR options, and that includes recovery outside of the current cloud service provider. So I think good advice there. If recovery outside of the cloud isn't an option, then as you say, Cole, line of business decision makers really need to be aware that before they sign up for them and that service, the cloud does go down, doesn't it? And there's very little we can do about it.
Yes. And you also have to remember that a lot of the discussion about Azure is at the enterprise level. Most MSPs not only don't have the resources, but certainly don't have the personnel or the money to be able to build redundant operations in two different Azure clouds on different sides of the continent. It's just not practical in the small business space. So, well, Microsoft may have all kinds of redundancies. You are not likely to build two mirrored servers in different data centers just because this happens once every 5 years.
It actually reminds me a little bit of a technology that we take for granted now, but some MSPs are still struggling with. That's voice over IP. I was speaking to an MSP just last week, and they were saying clients have got an expectation of telephone systems of any shape or size that you just pick up the phone and it works. Clients have reached that stage almost with cloud technologies. They just expect it to work and work and work. What I used to do as an MSP when we sold VoIP technologies was to make very, very clear to the client that actually you're going to get a ton more functionality. It's going to be really powerful. However, one in, say, every 100 times, you're going to pick up that handset and you're not going to get the dial tone. It's just the way it works. But put it back down and it's going to work again. Do you think it's a case of us as MSPs having conversations with clients and just setting their expectation that, yeah, the cloud is fantastic, but it isn't going to work every time?
Well, it's also the case that in terms of expectations, just letting clients know, here's what you do when there's a delay in this. This is what you can expect. This is what you can expect from me, from Microsoft, from whoever. Just give them some sense. I always sort of feel like when I go to the doctor and he says, first we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this, it hurts less when I know what's going to happen, right? So the other thing is, I really think, especially in the small business space, that we need to focus on hosted services, not hosted servers. If you had hosted services, hosted Exchange mailboxes, for example, the likelihood that you had an outage last week is extremely low. If you're running your own Exchange server on an Azure server in the cloud, A, you have lots and lots of maintenance, but B, you are subject to these kinds of outages. And you know, if you're supporting a client that's got 30 or 50 desktops, there's just no excuse for putting it onto that choice of services, in my opinion.
I think I would agree. And going back to something you said, I don't think anybody is expecting, certainly the SMB space, for MSPs to be able to put together faultless redundant solutions. I was at the Amazon Web Services user group here in the UK just last week, and there were some larger MSPs talking about putting services like VMware on the AWS services to get the benefits of both those technologies. So I think it's a way away, isn't it? But perhaps we're approaching a world where it's not just the cloud on one particular vendor, but as Dave Birmingham says, looking around for maybe spreading your risk across multiple vendors.
What's available to us today is so far above what used to be. 15 years ago, 20 years ago, to imagine that you could spin up an emergency server in a cloud environment would cost millions of dollars. And now we do it for a few hundred dollars a month.
Yeah.
So the idea that we can have failover clusters and whatever, It's coming. It's going to be practical. It's going to be reasonable. We're just not there yet. We're going quickly on our way, but we're not there.
Putting all of the technology to one side for a moment, I thought the biggest lesson that MSPs can take out of this, certainly from my perspective, is that realizing that if you rely on any one form of communication to reach your clients and to actually pass messages along to them in emergencies, that's not a good plan, is it? So Microsoft here, you know, their own status page was down, and so they moved across to Twitter to do things. Have a look at your own lines of communications with clients. If the telephones were down, how would you get in touch with people? If email was down, how would you get in touch with people? And making your clients aware of that is really, really important.
I imagine if I put something out on Twitter, 0% of my clients would see it. I have to tell them, if there's a problem and you can't communicate, go check Twitter. Like, they need to know that that's what they need to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and while we're on the subject of communication, there's an interesting story that you came across about the best social media platform. Carl, tell us more.
So for those who haven't looked at it, Reddit is a very interesting platform. And those who have looked at it, it's really kind of this very meager, almost watered down looking interface, although it's become more robust recently. But Reddit is basically people typing and putting in notes about things and building communities. And they have recently reached number three, at least short term, as the most popular website, third most popular website in the world, displacing Facebook. Now, since then, they've dropped back down to number five. But and actually, this changes like day to day. But certainly, they're in the top handful of sites now. And in terms of social media, depends on whether you consider YouTube social media, but Facebook and Reddit are the top two actual pure social media outlets. And I think most people didn't know that. I certainly didn't know that they were that popular. You and I have talked about how I check in from time to time, but I don't camp out there. But lots of people do. Apparently, more time is spent per user per day on Reddit than on Facebook. So the people who go there do actually spend a great deal more time there.
This is a story that Quartz.com have shared about Reddit's sort of rise. Reddit's been around for quite some time, but I think it's always been perceived as a niche site for geek interests. But overtaking Facebook, that's something, even if it was only temporarily.
And I don't think it's temporary. I think, in fact, that it's heading up, and Facebook is probably heading down. I mean, Facebook has had so many issues with sort of managing their environment and their community, and Reddit is just becoming stronger and stronger on those fronts. Mm. They haven't been called in front of Congress, for example. So, you know, that goes a long way. One of the things about Reddit is that it really represents the way nerds like you and I used to communicate on the internet a long, long time ago. Somebody will throw something up and a lot of people will come out of the woodwork. And if you're just asking for opinions, man, it's a free for all. But if you're asking for help, you get this amazing collection of people who are willing to help you, even though they have no idea who you are. The other thing is that Reddit allows you to be completely anonymous. And Facebook, at least theoretically, you're not supposed to be anonymous at all. You're supposed to always use your real name. But we certainly know now that that's not what's going on.
Well, I've been aware of the MSP subreddit across on Reddit, which is full of really, really good content. At the same token, you and I are aware from many, many years of being online and bulletin boards and forums and things like that. It's easy, isn't it, to lose a lot of time, you know, engaging with every single conversation on these forums as well.
The statistics, at least in this Quartz article, they say that Facebook users spend an average of 10 minutes and 37 seconds a day on Facebook. That seems very low, but then I might be on the high end of the distribution. But for that 10 minutes, Reddit's users spend 15 minutes a day, which is a dramatic increase over the 10 minutes. And again, the people at the high end of that scale are probably much more than that.
going back to the signal versus noise ratio, you know, how much of the stuff that's actually posted to these forums is useful or not. I found anecdotally recently, I guess, that a lot of searches I've done for MSP information have led me to the MSP subreddit. So there's clearly a lot of stuff of value being posted there.
Yes. Also, one of the things that's happened with the recent redesign is it's, to me anyway, obvious that they're getting ready to do massive increased advertising. Mm. So there are some people in the Reddit community that they have that old school mentality about the internet, which is everything should be free and we shouldn't even have to put up with ads. But the reality is that ads are coming. And as someone who does advertising, I'm looking to see what that might cost me.
Interesting to see how this goes. I'm going to see you in person the next time we speak, aren't I, Carl? So heading across to Continuum Navigate across in Boston.
Yes, I was in Boston last week and I'll be there again in 2 more weeks. So it's actually closer for you than it is for me. For me, it's like a 7-hour adventure.
Wow, I did not know that. We're going to record another live episode of the podcast when we get to Boston. So that should be a lot of fun.
Yes, it'll be great.
So if anybody listening to this, listener to the show, reach out to us and perhaps come and join us in the audience in Boston. We'd love to see you and meet you there in person. So that's what's been going on, and we will look forward to seeing you next time.
You're listening to Frankly MSP.
You'll find links to the resources Carl and Richard discuss in today's show notes at avic.com/franklymsp/027. Now we come to my interview with Alex Hoff, Avic's VP of Product and Sales, about Avic's new industry report called Managing Network Vendor Diversity. I will, of course, put a link to the free report in today's show notes so you can grab it and have a look at it for yourself. Hey, Alex, welcome to Frankly MSP.
Thank you very much, Jen.
So Avic just published a data report on the topic of network device vendors and how many vendors an average MSP is actually managing at any given time. What can you tell us about the data?
So it's really interesting. So just a little background here, we did this report across over 1,000 MSPs just to get a good sense there. Like, I've talked to hundreds, if not thousands of different MSPs, and I've kind of come to this conclusion that anecdotally, we manage a lot of different vendors. Now, the data shows us that on any given single network, there's on average, or a median, I guess, 2 different network vendors. So imagine that you have a firewall vendor, and maybe you're a switching Wi-Fi vendor or vice versa, but you pick 1 or 2 different vendors. But you think of that, an MSP manages multiple different networks. And so if you've got 2 networks on one and 2 different vendors on another, then you're looking at 4. And so what we found is that if we looked across an MSP's install base, that the median jumped from 2 vendors on a single network to 4 across the install base. And quite interestingly enough, there was a lot of different MSPs that had like 10 or 12 different network vendors that they had under management across their install base. And it's like, wow, that's a large variety of different devices, manufacturers, firmware versions that you had to manage. And that's kind of crazy, you know, when you actually start looking into the data.
Now, do you see any difference in terms of MSP size? Like, was this across the board or were bigger MSPs managing more?
It kind of depends on the life cycle of the client. We've seen some MSPs that say, hey, we only use Meraki. For us to work with you, you have to use Meraki, and they standardize right away. Certainly, there was a gravitation towards larger MSPs to enforce their standards a little bit more rigorously. But the data suggests that on the smaller end of the market, that they were taking more of what was deployed already. And, you know, there's only so much we can glean from this data. They could be early in their refresh cycles. They could have just brought them on board. So, you know, what I'm really interested to see is how does this shift over time? If you think of a network under management today, what does that same network look like a year from now?
And so do you plan to do this report annually?
Absolutely. I think, you know, a point in time snapshot of this data, you know, I think we gleaned a lot. A lot of work went into this. I think we learned a lot about the popular vendors, who's dominating, who's emerging. But really, time will show us on a per network basis which vendors are being swapped out because they're legacy, which ones are the emerging trends. I think you can certainly see from the market share of vendors like Meraki and Wireless that, hey, they've been around for a while, but they have a lion's share of the market already. That's pretty interesting. Cisco dominates on switching, largely on switching, and that's interesting. Is that market share growing, shrinking? Is the launch of new products by Cisco going to impact that in our market, the managed service market, or are those enterprise products going to remain in the enterprise space?
Were there any big surprises for you in the data?
Certainly. I laughed when we saw the number of switch vendors. So yes, we know Cisco, HP, Juniper, like the list goes on. The top nine there made a lot of sense. The other 90-ish, that made me laugh. And you know, if you start to dig into it, you start to see their specialty vendors. Fortinet has its own set of switches that power their access points that are centrally managed. That's really interesting. There's switch vendors that are specifically focused on submarkets, like audio visual. We have vendors that are focused on mechanical, like their specialty switch manufacturers. That makes sense, but I was definitely surprised to see how many vendors there actually were.
So what was the total number for switch?
102, if I recall correctly.
Wow, so over 100 different vendors competing for that MSP market share.
Yeah, definitely.
So what does this variety of vendors mean for an MSP in the day-to-day?
So if you think about the life cycle of a client with an MSP, an MSP walks into a network and says, hey, you know, I want to take you on as a managed services client. They have the conversation, but ultimately they have to manage it, right? So by taking on the fully managed network services, they are now responsible for delivering uptime of that network. And what that means is going to that network, making sure everything's up to date, making sure the rules are appropriate, making sure that the configuration of the network matches the business policy, and then they have to execute on that, which means logging into these devices. And if there's 102 different switch manufacturers out there, they're all a little bit different. I always like to tease the Windows community and say, hey, you know, what are there, like 10, 12 different versions of Windows? But they're all fundamentally pretty similar. Well, there's the same number of versions of Cisco iOS almost. Then you add in SonicWall, HP, Juniper, and the list just keeps going. And so as a lowly technician, how do I configure VLAN? How do I create a VoIP policy to prioritize my traffic? Every vendor is so different that it's going to require a lot of effort and largely a high degree of risk when you're going and making these changes, because if you make one little mistake, boom, the network stops working and no one's happy then. So the takeaway there is there's such a diverse landscape here. And given that every vendor is different, there's a lot of manual effort going into making sure the networks perform the way they do.
And that's a drag on productivity, efficiency, all kinds of things in the business.
Yeah, let's take a simple example. Let's say a technician leaves my organization. I want to swap out the passwords on all the firewalls. How do I do that? Right? Like you log into every single different one of them. Let's say it's some tools to log in quickly. You still have to go through the act of figuring out how to change a password on SonicWall versus Cisco ASAs versus Fortinet versus da-da-da-da-da. And if I have four or five different firewall vendors, I'm having to document the right techniques, hopefully, if I'm a mature MSP, document the right procedures so that I'm not looking this up every single time. But there's still a lot of work that goes into manually doing this. There is almost no automation in this space.
So let's talk about what can an MSP who's dealing with a wide variety of vendors across a whole bunch of networks do to manage that diversity and improve their efficiency?
Well, let me start with a shameless plug first. I mean, we're here. We work for AVIC. We do provide a network management solution for MSPs to help them scale efficiently. However, this isn't a podcast about AVIC so much as a podcast to talk about best practices. And I think one of the best practices is one I kind of touched on in a previous answer, which is documentation. There are several different ways to go about changing a password on vendor A versus vendor B, whether it be the UI, whether it be the CLI. But to the extent that you can figure that out, document it, so that the next time I log into that vendor, I don't have to go and figure out how to do it. I don't have to go on Google, spend time trying to find the right way to do it and experiment. Rather, I follow something that's well understood, a proper process document that's been reviewed by the team, and it goes off without a hitch. That's what we want to scale. I mean, certainly that business practice applies not only to managing networks, but to almost any facet of the organization. So I think certainly process and documentation is paramount when managing a network.
What else can you tell us about the data that really stood out to you or was interesting?
So I think, you know, certainly Wi-Fi, we're starting to see so many vendors, starting to see some consolidation. As I mentioned earlier, Meraki is very dominant, but you're starting to see vendors like Ubiquiti, a low cost, high functionality solution. Maybe it's not as feature rich as some of the enterprise vendors like Aruba, but at the same time, most MSPs operate in the 5 to 30 employee network, and you know, you don't need crazy features like beamforming and crazy RF analysis. I don't pretend to be an expert in wireless, but often you can get away with one AP, maybe even two. So some of the complex features just aren't needed. And I think that kind of supports some of the data that I've heard. On the switching side, honestly, a little surprise to me was how dominant Cisco was. We knew they were very popular, But some of their devices, like the 2960, are just prolific across the install base. I mean, that's like their bread and butter. So very interested to see some of the comments by MSPs saying they stand this, they really do stand behind the premium products like Cisco and HP, whether it be for just the support they've had, the brand reputation, the partner network. It's kind of interesting. It goes counter to some of the what I've heard from some MSPs, like I just buy on quality and price.
The flip side of there being so many vendors in each category is that managing that can be difficult, but it also means that you have a lot of choice. So you have the option of looking at all of these different solutions, you know, which one has the combination of features and functionality and cost that's going to be best for my client. But evaluating, say, 100 vendors is going to be very difficult as well. Where do you suggest MSPs start in trying to figure out which devices and vendors are going to be best for their clients?
That's a tricky question because I think it speaks to the skill set of the MSP. What is your specialty? If you're a network specialist shop, then clearly you want to pick the right tools for the right job. Also, depending on the size of the networks, what is the profile of the client that you serve? If you tend to gravitate to larger networks, they're going to have different feature sets than the ones that gravitate to smaller networks. Certainly do not go out and evaluate 100 different vendors. That just seems crazy. I think the end result you want to get to is a set of standards. You want to have a preferred firewall, you want to have a preferred switch, maybe a backup one, depending if the cost profile doesn't fit. How you do that? That is a really good question. I've seen people say, you know what, we only work with vendors that we see. So what are the vendors that show up in our channel? That's one technique. Another technique is just go with tried and true. Pick good old Blue Cisco, pick HP. Those are nothing wrong with those techniques. Certainly just buying on price is another technique. Again, it depends on your clients and what their needs are. So we've seen a lot of MSPs say, hey, you know, we're an all Cisco shop. But when that doesn't work, we go to our tier two, which is Ubiquiti. That's one strategy. Certainly the other technique is we're just going to manage everything. We're just going to take whatever our clients have and we'll just pick the flavor du jour. I don't think that from a scalability point of view is the best technique, but also seen it. And if the networks are stable, you'll get away with it.
Do you think this report could be of help? Like here are the top 9 vendors in each category. Maybe this would be a short list to start with.
Well, I certainly don't recommend going out and buying 3Com anymore. You know, we saw that it had actually shocking 1.7% of the market share for switches. And like, holy crap, that vendor was acquired like almost 8-9 years ago. That to me was like, huh. The takeaway there is they build good stuff. But I don't recommend going out and buying a bunch of used 3Com just because they're in the top 10. Again, I think it comes back to who do you feel comfortable working with? What is your knowledge domain? Yeah, I think those are the kind of criteria I would look for.
Big picture takeaway on this report.
Wow, that's a really good question. Big picture. I think I mentioned already, so many vendors in the very crowded space. It speaks to a lack of standardization. I think big picture, you kind of take a couple steps back from this report. The fundamental problem here is that there are 100 plus vendors. We had a standard emerge through the 80s, 90s, SNMP, Simple Network Management Protocol. It's okay. I mean, as a vendor, we have to deal with varying degrees of quality implementations. And there's no real standards above that, right? Like SNMP has gotten us so far. Everyone talks about cloud APIs, API this, API that, JSON this, JSON that. But really, there's no one standard that is ubiquitous across all the different vendors. We're seeing technologies like OpenConfig and IETF as a similar standard that are saying, here's the be-all and end-all way to configure a device and get its inventory. But it's not across every vendor. And it's going to take a really long time. So if there's one takeaway, it's like, hey, vendors that'll listen to this, look at some standardization here. This would be a lot easier for our MSP partners if it was easier to manage.
Awesome. Thanks, Alex, for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Jen. It's been a pleasure.
That was Alex Hoff, an Ovit co-founder and the company's VP of Product and Sales. If you'd like your own copy of the Managing Network Vendor Diversity Report, it's free. You can download it from the Ovit website, and I'll put the link for that in the show notes at ovit.com/franklymsp/027. As we wrap things up, I'd like to give a shout out to Susie G, who left Frankly MSP a 5-star review on iTunes and said, we're, quote, a must listen for any service provider. Tons of insight in every podcast. Thanks, Susie. Appreciate the feedback. What about you? If you enjoyed this episode, consider dropping us a handful of stars and a review on iTunes. And stay tuned for our next episode, which marks our, trumpets please, 1-year podcast anniversary. We just might have some surprises in store. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP, brought to you by Ovic Networks. the most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks.